Welcome to Euromill's first podcast. Last week, the Council adopted the Strategic Compass for Security and Defence, or with the complete name, Strategic Compass for Security and Defence, for a European Union that protects its citizens' values and interests and contributes to international peace and security. This Strategic Compass, in the final version, it is included a quite hard language concerning Russia's threat for the European Union. It's also about increasing capabilities, investing in defense, and move towards greater coherence between member states' armed forces. So we have a few questions, of course, on the Strategic Compass, not unlimited, but we want to pose these questions to some of our experts. And our expert today is Dr. Niklas Nowacki. Niklas Nowacki is a senior research officer at the Wilfried Martens Center for European Studies, where he specializes in the EU's foreign security and defense policy. Dr. Niklas Nowacki, welcome at Euromill's podcast.
Thanks a lot for having me, and it's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Well, let's kick off with the first question, a short one. What is for you the Strategic Compass in a few words?
Well, in a few words, I think it's a cautiously ambitious document that sets a pretty clear roadmap for the development of the EU security and defense policy until 2030. And the 2030 timeline is very key, I think, because, I mean, when the preparation of the Strategic Compass began in 2020, I mean, the member states were wanted to have this document that would give some new guidance, develop new proposals and set new targets for the EU security and defense policy that would then guide its development for the rest of the decade. And I think having had a look at the final product, I mean, this seems to be something in which the member states, the European External Action Service and the Council, I mean, have succeeded quite well. And I'm rather happy with the end result.
Thank you. Now, Euromill is an organization dealing with military personnel, with their working conditions and everything. So, of course, we are interested in to see how this will continue for men and women in defense forces. And one of the things that we were following in the past months already was this rapid deployment capacity. Now, we see in the document that it will be constituted up to 5,000 troops for rescue, evacuation, stabilization operations, and that they will train and exercise together. Now, what we wonder, because that was not so clear in the past months, what is now the final situation? Will there be national soldiers? Will there be European Union soldiers?
I think that we have to wait a little bit further to see what the final construction, what the final concept for the rapid deployment capacity will look like. The document and the Strategic Compass says that the EU will now develop this rapid deployment capacity starting from now, and it is meant to be ready by 2025. As far as I understand, it is not, however, meant to be a standing force. To me, it seems more of a framework that combines some of these existing EU military crisis management tools and instruments, such as the battle groups, with then potentially including some additional contributions from the member states. And one key aspect of that is that it will also include live exercises, regular live exercises. I mean, the EU battle groups, EU naval forces as well have conducted live exercises in the past as well, but it hasn't really been that regular. So I think this live exercise component is very important and something that can increase interoperability and the effectiveness of the European Union crisis management. But when it comes to the status of the forces, I don't think there will be any change. I don't think the rapid deployment capacity will introduce any changes to the status of forces compared to the status that troops have had in previous EU military crisis management frameworks and missions. So this would mean that they would be national soldiers. They would be contributed on a national basis by the member states, whether it would be to the existing battle groups, or in the form of some other type of contingent or contribution that would then be integrated into the rapid deployment capacity. But there would be national forces that would then operate jointly under the EU flag, as far as I understand. So basically, like no change to the existing status of forces in EU military operations. But we would have to, of course, kind of see what the final concept of the rapid deployment capacity will look like. And as I mentioned earlier, the construction of this instrument like starts now, and it is meant to finish by 2025.
Yeah, thank you. The EU battle groups is something we all have known in the past years. I think also all criticized the functioning of the battle group. So together with you, we were looking forward to how this will develop now going to this new rapid deployment capacity. For our next question, we were also reading in the document, of course, a lot on hybrid threats. I would almost say it's something new, but it's absolutely not new. But it's now really coming on the table. And then one of the things in the document is that the document says that there will be an EU hybrid toolbox, a toolbox that should provide a framework for coordinated response to hybrid campaigns affecting EU and its member states. How do you see this toolbox working?
Well, the thing is, I mean, the document itself is rather like vague when it comes to the question of like how the EU hybrid toolbox might would work. I mean, what the strategic compass says is that it will be a new framework that will kind of put existing EU hybrid and cyber tools under one umbrella, under one framework to increase coherence among these instruments and increase the EU's effectiveness when it comes to dealing with both hybrid attacks and cyber attacks. And then in addition to bringing these existing tools into this under the umbrella of this new EU hybrid toolbox, there would be like some other new tools as well that might be developed and included. I think the document also talked about the development of EU hybrid rapid reaction teams as well. So this would be an additional element that would then kind of be part of this new EU hybrid toolbox. But as I mentioned, I mean, on the practicalities of how the EU hybrid toolbox would work, who would decide on its use, etc. I mean, the document doesn't say anything. So I think on this case as well, like we have to kind of see, like now that the strategic compass has been approved, how the development of this concept like will start, what it will look like in the end, like when it's finalized, and then what will be the final practical modalities that relate to its functioning.
Yeah. Let us jump also a little bit to the new tools, what we called them in the past years. We were all already working with the European Defence Fund, talking a lot about PESCO, the Permanent Structured Cooperation. Now, the Strategic Compass makes also a link with both of them. So what the contribution of this European Defence Fund and PESCO, the Permanent Structured Cooperation, what will this be according to the Strategic Compass in filling in strategic gaps and enhancing capabilities?
Well, both the Permanent Structured Cooperation Framework and the European Defence Fund are quite prominently like featured in the Strategic Compass, particularly in the invest basket. There are a lot of mentions and emphasis in the document that stress the fact that both the Permanent Structured Cooperation Framework and the European Defence Fund will be made full use of by the EU and the member state when it comes to developing the capabilities that the European Union needs. This applies, of course, like already to the existing set of PESCO projects that have already been adopted and launched. There are emphasis that, I mean, more work will be done to ensure that, I mean, these projects will deliver and we should have I think one third of the existing PESCO projects like should be delivering like preliminary results by 2025. And this is something that is emphasized in the strategic compass as well. But then the strategic compass like also lists a set of like strategic capabilities that need to be developed from relating to like naval platforms, a main battle tank, space-based capabilities, etc. And it is emphasized as well that both the European Permanent Structured Cooperation and the European Defence Fund like will of course be used to facilitate the development of these capabilities. And there are also like some other interesting points. Notably, the compass talks about the possibility of increasing the bonus that member states would get if they would develop capabilities jointly using the European Defence Fund. So there might be a bigger EDF bonus coming for joint capability development projects, which could be an additional incentive for EU member states to create capability development projects together. And I think this is very positive. So when it comes to the Permanent Structured Cooperation Framework and the European Defence Fund, I think there's a mix of continuity and novelty in the concept. So there's both emphasizing that what is already being done, what has already been decided in the past needs to continue with stronger efforts. And then on the other hand, there are also like very clear language ensuring that we need to use these existing tools and instruments to ensure that Europe will also be able to develop jointly the next generation capabilities and the strategic capabilities that it needs to be able to defend its sovereignty and remain as an effective and credible security provider.
So we could almost say that the fact that we have now a strategic compass is a kind of new boost for surely PESCO, for the Permanent Structured Cooperation and the projects that are already on the table. As you know, we as Euromil, we are quite interested in these PESCO projects and we hope also to bring in due time a kind of social input in some of these projects. So also this is something that we will look furthermore in the future. Now, one of the chapters of the strategic compass is about partnerships. Strategic compass says that partnerships are an essential instrument to support EU's ambition to be a global strategic player. Of course, one of the partners is and will be NATO. How do you see this relation EU-NATO going on?
Well, in the strategic compass, like NATO is mentioned a lot. There's a lot of language on NATO. And lots of emphasis that cooperation between the European Union and NATO like will be increased like across like different policy areas and thematic fields. But in addition to this increased like political dialogue, in addition to kind of increased contacts and cooperation, like there doesn't seem to be that much that is new. In the actual proposal section, I mean, there's only like one kind of specific bullet point, I believe, that like mentions NATO specifically. And the language in that bullet point is like rather general, emphasizing that, excuse me, that the cooperation process between the European Union and NATO that is based on the joint declarations that have already been published by the two organizations should continue. And in addition, more cooperation and dialogue there should be more cooperation and dialogue between the two organizations. Also in these kind of new, in the area of new challenges and new fields, such as the security and defense aspects of climate change, hybrid and cyber threats, and defense in space as well. But like I said, in addition to this increased dialogue, in addition to increased coordination and cooperation, it is a little bit unclear to me, I mean, what will actually change now in the area of EU defense, EU-NATO cooperation after the strategic compass has been approved. Perhaps we will know a little bit more in June when NATO adopts its new strategic concept. There might be kind of something new relating to the area of EU-NATO cooperation in that document as well. So we shall see. But in general, like I think kind of EU-NATO cooperation has been on a pretty good path, like for the past years. There have been several joint declarations that have been adopted, and this ongoing war in Ukraine, Russia's unprovoked war against Ukraine, I mean, I think creates new, even further incentives for the two organizations to boost their cooperation in different fields, including in the area of military mobility, where they already cooperate.
Yeah, and so in this way, 2022 will, as already said several times in the past by quite some people, will really become the year of defense, will be the year of defense with a strategic compass and also a new NATO document coming up. Let's jump once to the member states. I think Euromil was not alone criticizing in the past quite often member states for their absolute political willingness or non-willingness to do something and to really integrate defense forces. Now, there are quite some ambitions in this strategic compass, but the implementation, let's be fair, depends on the willingness or not of the member states. What is this time really the willingness of member states to move forward in defense integration?
Well, I think the approval of the strategic compass itself, like, is a pretty good indication that, like, there is a pretty high willingness at the moment among the 27 to deepen EU defense cooperation. Integration, I think, is a difficult word in the field of security and defense because, I mean, member states are not really kind of transferring like sovereign powers and sovereign rights like to the EU, but I mean they are using the EU framework within the scope of their existing rules and powers to enhance like their mutual defense cooperation. But I think kind of the willingness has been, I think, rather high, like since 2016 especially. Like we've seen, like following the adoption of the global strategy, the international environment has been a big factor, like in convincing EU countries to cooperate. But there's been a flurry of new initiatives that have been launched since 2016. I mean, we talked about the Permanent Structural Cooperation and European Defence Fund framework already. The Strategic Compass process itself was launched like back in 2020 because during the Germany EU Council presidency, because Germany thought in the run-up to its presidency that there is a need to fix this gap between the level of ambition that the EU has in the field of security and defense and then what it does in practice. There's been a little bit of mismatch often because if you have a look at the level of ambition that is outlined in the global strategy and in the following implementation plan and security and defense, it's very high. So the EU wants to be able to act abroad to protect its own territory and its citizens and then act together with its partners as well. And I think in many cases, I mean, we've fallen a little short of this ambition. And I think kind of the strategic compass is a step to the right direction to further like fix the EU's, the gap between like what the EU has done in practice and what its level of ambition is. And I think given the ongoing war in Ukraine, given the disastrous evacuation operation in Afghanistan last year, given the geopolitical tensions in the Indo-Pacific region, there's a lot of incentives at the moment for EU member states to like make sure that the strategic compass is implemented effectively and that the EU becomes a more credible security actor as a result.
Well, linked to what you just said, there is also a part in the strategic compass talking about the decision-making process for the future. Now, what the document says is that a more flexible decision-making process could be established through constructive abstention. But it says also that in 23, the EU will decide on practical modalities for the implementation of Article 44, which will then allow a group of willing and able member states to plan and conduct a mission or operation within the EU. Do you see this as a possibility?
Yeah, I think it's certainly a possibility. Like, if I remember correctly, constructive abstention has been used only once so far. And that was in 2008 or 9 when Cyprus abstained from the EU's decision to launch the EULEX Kosovo operation, but like since then it hasn't been used at all. I think constructive abstention could potentially like be used a bit more. I mean, if some EU countries are not willing or uninterested in launching an operation, like in some part of the world where the majority of EU countries would nevertheless want to act, because then that would like remove the unanimity block from the decision-making process. So I think that should be encouraged, like, I mean, if possible. Article 44 is interesting because it would enable a group of willing EU member states, a subgroup of EU member states, to act on behalf of the entire union if there is a decision for them to act under Article 44. So essentially, I mean, they would be conducting a type of coalition of the willing on behalf of the entire EU. Now, how exactly Article 44 would work, it has never been used so far. How exactly it would work is a little bit unclear, and I think the strategic compass like mentions that the practical modalities will be clarified in the coming years. But the challenge with Article 44 is that during the development of the strategic compass, I mean, I believe that it was clarified that triggering Article 44 would nevertheless require a unanimous decision by the entire Council, so the full 27. So the decision-making process would be quite similar to the decision-making process when it comes to setting up a standard EU military operation. But however, then once Article 44 has been triggered, it might be possible for the subgroup of EU member states that are participating and leading in the Article 44 operation to adopt and approve the subsequent planning documents amongst themselves, like without requiring the consent of the full 27. And if this is indeed the case, I mean, if this is how Article 44 is interpreted and how it might be used, I mean, who knows? I mean, perhaps it could increase like a flexibility to a degree when it comes to planning and preparing kind of various planning documents for EU military operations. But then, of course, I mean, the first decision of actually setting up an operation and launching it would be rather the same as it has been for standard EU military operations up until this date. So it's a little bit unclear as of now yet. I mean, what the practical added value of Article 44 would be. But in order for us to kind of see this, I mean, we would really have to see it being used in practice. We would have to kind of wait and see if it is triggered, and then see like how an Article 44 operation would differ in terms of its planning processes and the easiness of its preparation and conduct to standard EU military operations.
Thanks so much, and Dr. Novacki, thanks so much for your views on these things. But before we close this podcast, a last question for you. What would you like to be the outcome now of the strategic compass in reality?
Well, I would like it to bring about a more effective European Union, a more self-confident European Union, and a more kind of geopolitical European Union in the field of security and defense. And if it helps the EU to kind of narrow the gap between its level of ambition in security and defense, which is outlined in the global strategy, and the practice of what it does, I think that would be extremely positive and extremely welcome. And I certainly hope that will be the case. But I also kind of think that there's no room for failure, really, like at this moment, because the international environment and Europe's security environment is so perilous at the moment that, like, if the EU is unable to implement the strategic compass effectively, if it's unable to meet the targets that are outlined in the compass, I mean, then like it's questionable. I mean, whether it can ever do that. But I mean, I'm optimistic about that, and I think it's a decent document. And just to finish, I mean, I think it's appropriate for me to pay tribute to the member states, the External Action Service, and everybody like who's contributed to the strategic compass process and to the success of the final document.
Thank you so much. And I think that we at Euromil, we surely share your optimism in this field and be thankful to those who worked on it. But I think also it's very clear that as well, when we are looking to to the rapid deployment capacity, if we look to EU-NATO collaboration, to the way how Article 44 one day could be used or not, that there is still a lot to see in the years to come. We will really have to monitor the situation. And the document foresees anyway that there will be at a certain moment a possibility for an update. So let's see what will happen in the years to come. It will, of course, always belong to the will, as already said and discussed, from the member states. And as already said in the past weeks by several defense ministers, but also by the High Representative, Mr. Borrell, everything will depend now on the implementation of the Strategic Compass. So I think, Dr. Novaki, a lot of work for you in the years to come to monitor. We as Euromel, as already said, we will stay in close contact with specialists just like you, with the Martin Center. We also will monitor how things will develop. And of course, we will always have this critical eye for how men and women will be seen and how they will live with the Strategic Compass. Thank you once again for your collaboration, for your input, and we will surely be back with you in the months and years to come on this and other subjects. Thank you very much for that. And for our listeners, I would say, look to our website, check our social media, because we will be coming back with other topics and with the Strategic Compass in the near future. Thank you so much, Dr. Novaki. Have a nice day and see you soon.
Thanks a lot for having me.